And it is 7 a.m. in the West Coast. It is 12 noon in the East Coast. And it is 5 p.m. in Jerusalem, the capital of Israel. Today, September 20th, 2015. And this is Oily Benny Davis. And this is The Impossible Truth. Today on BBS Radio Studio One, we are going to talk to Dr. Courtright about his interesting field and about the capacity of changing the mental condition of humankind. And, you know, there are many experts in the world, and sometimes we really would like to tap into them to understand in what way we can change one way. And I'm very happy and honored and pleased to welcome Dr. Courtright. Thank you for coming to the show.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's wonderful. I know that your occupation is really a specialty, something that people cannot grasp usually. I would like you to introduce your field and matter in the neurology, which is interesting to all, but it's really new. It takes a lot of effort to understand.
Yes, I'm a professor of psychology at the California Institute of Integral Studies here in San Francisco, and a clinical psychologist, and author of this new book called The Neurogenesis Diet and Lifestyle, Upgrade Your Brain, Upgrade Your Life. And it's really looking at this brand new field of neurogenesis, which is how the brain produces new brain cells. You know, we used to think that the brain stopped growing once people were in their early 20s. And after that, it was just one slow slide downhill. But now they've realized, just in the past 17, 18 years, that actually the brain makes new brain cells throughout our entire life. And it turns out that the rate at which we make new brain cells, our rate of neurogenesis, has a big impact, a huge impact, upon the whole quality of our life and the quality of our brain. That a low rate of neurogenesis, that is a low rate at which we make new brain cells, is associated with cognitive decline, with memory problems, with anxiety, with stress, with depression, with lowered immunity. And it turns out that a high rate of neurogenesis, a high rate of making new brain cells, is associated with the opposite, with cognitive enhancement, with rapid learning, with robust emotional resilience, with protection from anxiety, protection against stress, protection against depression, and heightened immunity for the physical body as well. So this book is about...
Let me grasp it, because you are making a game change here, because we were thinking that the brain really stopped creating new cells, and now you're telling us that we can actually bring a change by doing what a person should do to get to that phase of the new brain cells, which is awesome. It's incredible.
Yes, that's right. This is a game changer. This completely overthrows the old ideas about the brain. And it's really only in the last 5 or 10 years that it's become clear just how important our rate of neurogenesis is. And it's also become clear that we can increase our rate of neurogenesis by 5 times with profound effects in our lives at every level. So they did this one experiment with mice to see if they could increase their rate of neurogenesis. And they gave them a kind of holistic treatment. They called it an enriched environment, meaning they gave them a really good diet. They gave them a good emotional environment by having other friendly mice there that they could play with and mate with. They gave them exercise wheels. They gave them new things to explore, new things to learn. And they discovered that they could increase their rate of neurogenesis by 5 times. And these mice became kind of like super mice. It's like they had big cognitive advantages over their normal neurogenesis rate peers. And they also had big emotional advantages over their normal neurogenesis rate peers. And they were healthier in all ways. So they've
That's amazing. Since discovered that there are many things we can do. I'm pleased to hear that, because what you're telling us, that we have the capability of changing us and the people around us by a different, by changing our behavior. If we nurture, if we give love, caring, good nutrition, the environment can improve. That's how the brain cell will start improving too. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. Yes, this is hugely important for all of us, because just about everybody is operating at a much lower rate than they need to. That the brains of just about the entire world are actually deteriorated from what they could be, and that we could all be operating at a much higher level, every level, cognitively, emotionally, physically, spiritually as well. I mean, this is really a holistic approach, body, heart, mind, spirit. And when we use all these together, it has this, all these different, it has a synergistic effect where everything works together. If we just do one thing to increase brain health, it has a little bit of an effect. But if we do body, heart, mind, spirit all together, then we get a whole brain effect. It's like it's a whole brain approach to brain health. And this is, again, it's so new that almost nobody knows about this. There's a few neuroscientists who know about this, but the past few years I've just been researching this, and it's, I think it's so important for everybody.
Not just everybody. It's actually explained so much about the difference that we have as American people, you know, that they actually give importance to the environment, to their well-being, to the caring and the love of the people. That's why you see them different from others. And mostly more successful, and they are more knowledgeable because they have this factor in their culture, which in elsewhere, it's not like that, which is phenomenon that you mentioned as a therapy, where we consider it just a way of living. So I wonder if we try it on humans.
Go ahead.
No, please. I'm sorry for interrupting you. Did we have it on human? Did we try it?
Yes, that's right. So people, just about everybody is emotionally not where they could be. They could be feeling much happier, much more loving, much more connected. Cognitively, people could be operating at a much higher level in terms of their memory, in terms of new learning, in terms of executive function, in terms of just the delight of using their minds. And physically, so this program is, again, it's a body, heart, mind, spirit approach. And so there are certain things we can do at the physical level. And one part of that is diet, that just about everybody is eating a diet that is actually neurotoxic and is actually degrading the quality of our brains. But that there's a lot that we can do. There's a lot of nutrients we can eat that increase our rate of neurogenesis. And there's also some foods we need to stop eating because they decrease our rate of neurogenesis. Similarly, there's certain kinds of exercise which increase our rate of neurogenesis, and other kinds of exercise which don't have much effect on it, and so on and so forth. Should we get into some of the specifics?
Yes, please do. I can't wait.
Okay, well, one thing is exercise. When people do aerobic exercise, so aerobic exercise are things like running, biking, swimming, walking fast, walking uphill, fast dancing, anything that gets you breathing fast, breathing hard, is aerobic exercise. The brain fairly explodes with new brain cells when that happens. Other kinds of exercise, weightlifting, yoga, these are good for the body, but they don't do much in terms of your brain, at least in terms of neurogenesis. So we want to have some kind of aerobic exercise, if possible. That's one thing that's very helpful. However, it turns out that these new brain cells that get produced through aerobic exercise, about half of them die off. About half of them get pruned by the brain within a few weeks. So there are other things we can do to keep these new brain cells alive. So, for example, one very important nutrient is something called hesperidin. Now, hesperidin is a bioflavonoid that's found in citrus fruits. And what it does when we eat it, and we can take it either as a capsule or through citrus fruits, is it keeps these newly formed brain cells alive. It prevents them from dying off. So there's a number of nutrients. In the book, I go into 30 or 40 different nutrients that we can take. Another one is omega-3 fatty acids, like fish oil.
Right.
Again, the brain thrives on these kinds of fat. You know, the brain is made up of about two-thirds fat. And what we need in our diet is lots of good, healthy fat. And we need to not eat bad, unhealthy fat. You know, if you want to build a high-end house, you use good high-end material. You use good lumber. You don't use decaying wood or bad wood. Similarly with the brain, to build a better brain, we need lots of high-grade material. And partly that is high-quality, healthy fats. And by healthy fats, I mean saturated fats and omega-3 polyunsaturated fatty acids, as well as monounsaturated fats. What we need, in essence, are non-oxidized fats. And what we need to avoid are oxidized fats. And oxidized fats are fats that have been cooked too long or become rancid through heat. So, for example, cooking with vegetable oil produces lots of oxidized fats. And when those oxidized fats get into your bloodstream, get absorbed by the body, and get into your brain, they produce inflammation, and inflammation just eats up the inside of our blood vessels and has a damaging effect on the brain. It lowers our rate of neurogenesis. So we want to eat lots of good, healthy fats, which are unoxidized fats. So things like avocados, nuts, grass-fed beef, pasture-raised eggs and dairy, and wild-caught fish. You know, they did one experiment where they looked at people who ate fish 1 to 3 times a week, and they found that they had 16% more brain cells, more gray matter in the higher functioning part of their brain, unless they ate fried fish. If they ate fried fish, there was no difference. So fried food is terrible for the brain. It slows down our rate of neurogenesis, and it produces these inflammatory cytokines, and it also oxidizes the cholesterol that's in our blood, which produces heart disease, hardening of the arteries, and again, also lowers neurogenesis. So we need to switch our diet from unhealthy fats to healthy fats. That really feeds the brain.
Doctor, I want to thank you because what you're giving us, you're giving us a tool, an easy tool to improve our lifestyle without a lot, to think or do, just, by analyzing what we're eating, what we do as far as exercise and how we treat each other. And you're telling us we can go, you know, longer, better, and faster, if I may. It's amazing. The question is how people can find you. I really want to find, you know, the website or what book, where we can find your book, because it's really important that your knowledge will be, you know, known elsewhere. And we are talking on the radio, and I hope many people who listen can contact you or get with this diet, so we can have more people stronger mentally to overcome all the challenges that we as world are facing.
Good. Yes. So the book has a website called www.neurogenesisdiet.com. That's
neurogenesisdiet.com.
.com. Okay. And you can also get the book on Amazon or order it through any bookstore. It's called The Neurogenesis Diet and Lifestyle.
Okay.
And also my website is brantcourtwright.com.
Courtwright.com.
Yes.
It's amazing. Now, you talked about the diet, which is something we know because many people are talking about it, and we understand the fat and the happy fat and not so happy, and we understand the running, you know, like they're making aerobic. But tell me about the emotional status. How, when you talked about stress, how would it improve our stress level? How can we, you know, get in touch with our inner greater self? And improving the all, how we continue with this diet. After we do the diet, we do the exercise, what else?
Good. So emotionally, there's a lot that we can do to change our lives to increase neurogenesis. So it turns out that chronic stress has a terrible effect on the brain. It actually shrinks the brain. Chronic stress is one of the most pervasive things in the world right now. Just about everybody complains about too much stress. And it turns out with stress, as with fats, there's good stress and there's bad stress. And we need a certain amount of good stress. So good stress is short-term stress, moderate stress. It's like with exercise. What we're doing with exercise, we are stressing our muscles, they break down, but then we stop, we rest, and they build up stronger in the meantime. And it's the same with stress. A certain amount of stress we need, it's a challenge for us. We need emotional challenges to make us stronger, to bring forth new capacities, new parts of ourselves. But when stress is too much, like it's really like extreme stress, or when it's continuous stress, then it becomes damaging. And it's continuous stress that is the stress that most people are suffering from. Most people, you know, with cell phones, with the internet, people are connected with their work 24/7. They're expected to be on all the time, getting texts, getting email, checking email. This kind of chronic stress lowers our rate of neurogenesis and actually begins to shrivel some parts of the brain, like the hippocampus, that are extremely important for our functioning. So what we need to do is we need to take breaks. We need to unplug from the internet. We need to be offline. We need to have activities and be with people who we can just relax with. We can just let down our hair around. I mean, that's one good function of exercise also, is that it helps the body, after we exercise, to return to a homeostatic balance where we can just feel relaxed and feel calm once again. And that's what we need. We need ways to unwind and get relief from this constant stress that we have. And as a corollary to this, we need loving, supportive relationships. These are hugely important. Touch is another thing that really stimulates neurogenesis. You know, when a friend puts a reassuring hand on our shoulder, that has a big effect on our whole body chemistry.
And unbelievable.
It turns out that that also has a big effect on our brain as well. We are often a touch-starved culture, and so if we can just be touching and supporting each other and loving each other, that is great for the brain. I mean, in some ways, this is just common sense, right? But it's interesting that there's now the neuroscience to show that loving relationships are one of the best ways of increasing your brain's capacity and your brain's potential.
Wow. Dr. Korkmaz, I want you in every show. It's like fantastic because your voice, first of all, give us such a pleasant calmness that, you know, I can understand where you're coming from, and it's fantastic. But more of that, we need to learn to have, you know, we've run all day long around our tail. We are rushing. We're doing stuff, and we forget those little things that make the whole difference in the world. You know, for one, if you're saying just touching make your life better, is I'm with you, sir. It sounds yeah. a great therapy for me. You know, this is for the Jewish people. We have a new year just started, and this is a diet I want to take this year on, to make sure that, you know, our life is well-rounded with all a better atmosphere. Let me ask you now a neurological question, you know, something about this world. Would you think that behaving in such a way that, you know, it's in the positive, it's in creating atmosphere, it's in loving and caring, would you say that other people can feel it? Does it? You know, does it go over to the other? Does it contagious the other? Like other things, you know, they say your attitude is good to be contagious with. Do you think that other people can pick it up too? Would it be something?
I didn't quite get that. That other people can pick up what?
If that way of being is being transformed elsewhere, you know, if other people can feel the energy, if you change your, when you have this brain cell getting, is your energy is better, stronger, that people can pick on it, that like you're in a good mood? I wonder. I think so. I would think that everybody can feel it.
Yes, oh, absolutely. And it turns out that positive feelings are really kind of contagious as well, because there's a coherent brainwave pattern that gets produced with these positive feelings. So like love, gratitude, appreciation, things positive, actually kind of spiritual, loving feelings like this produce very coherent brainwaves and very coherent heart rhythms as well. And these kind of coherent brainwaves and heart rhythms are actually contagious, so to speak. That is, other people and other brains become entrained into that kind of rhythm. Whereas negative feelings like fear or anger, disappointment, that is a more chaotic brainwave. And that becomes, although we can pick up on it, we can feel that too to some degree, it's not contagious in quite the same way. It doesn't entrain another brain in quite the same way. So yes, these are very much states of being that affect other people.
I'm so pleased that you came on the show today, because if the world needs is a better attitude, you know, all around, and if we can start transforming for the well-being of oneself, you know, it's not like it just being, you know, you do it for the world. For your sake, you get better, and then the world get better too. You know, all the rest of us get in the same mode. This is actually turning the page on this status of chaos that the world created. Now, another question. Would you say that all those violence movies that people say really influence our brain status? Because I cannot tolerate all the violence in one movie. I need to leave what I see. Would you say that it's actually influencing us when we are stressed out of it?
Oh, certainly. I think that it is very important to be careful what we expose ourselves to, what we expose our brains to, because our brains change based on what they are exposed to. So I think there's no question now but that the studies are showing that these violent video games, they reduce impulse control in people, that they're not, it's not building the sort of optimal brains that we'd like. It has a negative impact on people and affects the way their brain gets wired as well. When you expose yourself to something, you change your brain. The brain reacts to everything that we expose itself to. So we need to be careful about what we expose ourselves to. We don't want to needlessly expose ourselves to violence and things like this, yes.
You know what? If there was a star to give on my, you know, my special guest and the surprise guest, you would get one today because you brought to my attention, you know, something amazing that, you know, it's always known to us, but you just collected it in one focus, which we can actually start training ourselves to become better. I'm really thankful for you today, and I bless you, and I hope that your success with this book will be humongous, so it will be the success of all of us, because if one will be affected, all of us will start being affected. It's amazing. Doctor, I really thank you for coming, and I hope that you will be you know, a friend to this show, and you will come again, and will be, you know, exposed to more of your knowledge and your calmness and your spirit, which is fantastic. Dr. Courtright, thank you so much for coming on my show. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for having me. This has been a lot of fun, and I thank you for helping to spread the word about neurogenesis.
God bless. I will. I'll put it on our page in the internet. I'll be happy to, if you put it on, you know, Facebook. Our page will be welcoming you. Okay?
Great.
Good luck. Good luck, sir. God
thank
bless
you.
You.
Thank
you so much for you doing for this universe. God bless you. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And bye-bye. And we're going to have a break now, and we're going to have some music, and we'll be right back after that. And we are back. This is Orly Benny Davis with DBS Radio, The Impossible Truth. Today is, you know, a special day just before the coming of Yom Kippur. It's the day of fasting for the Jewish faith, which we ask for forgiveness from everybody, all our friends, and all God Mighty, Almighty. And we want, you know, to start anew. We're turning the page on the last year, and we're saying, you know, we amend our ways and we improve our life, and we try to be better people for our soul. And, you know, there are so many issues that we need to talk about as far as, you know, religious, because our religious beliefs are different from each other, because every religion has its, you know, way of being, and it's rightly so. Now, the question is, what's the end goal of everything? Because if you practice a religion, and we want, you know, to understand each other, we want to know where you're going, as far as we are concerned. And right now, there is an incredible, incredible uproar about in Jerusalem, the only city of all in the world. And it's something that everybody needs to know about. There is a standstill on Temple Mount, and Ambassador Dennis Ross used to say that this is the source and the important focal point of all the conflict in the Middle East. And it is, because on that ground, it's where we all accept each other and we receive God blessing, because that's the ultimate test. And if anybody thinks that we have to start, choosing, it's not right. We are supposed to keep being who we are, hoping and blessing that for the other to accept us and give the rightful freedom for everybody. And on Temple Mount, for some reason, there is not the freedom that one will hope to. And today, there was a big delegation from the Israeli parliament, the Arab section of the Israeli parliament. You know, in the Israeli parliament, you have all kind of representatives, and some of them are Muslim. And they call themselves Palestinian, so I don't really understand why they are in the Israeli parliament if they're Palestinian. Which is crazy, you know. But they went and they went to meet the King of Jordan today, because they said that the status quo on Temple Mount, which says, I don't know what it says for as far as they're concerned, is being changed. And the truth of the matter, more people want to visit Temple Mount because they get to the source. They want to come to a happy place. They want to have God inside. And sure enough, you know, they are clashing over, you know, if they can go visit. And this is a holy place, and it's a, you know, it's archaeology, because there is nothing. There is, of course, the building, the mosque there, that they built on top of the residue of the temple, the first and second temple. So who is first there, it's dependent on history, because if history tells you, you know, before there was the temple and then they put the mosque on top, and just imagine if somebody that put the church there, what would it be? Would it belong to everybody or not? But outside Jerusalem as a city is international by declaration of United Nations. So by United Nations Resolution 181 of 1947, which declared, you know, 29th of November to 1947, it stated that the city of Jerusalem is international. So by definition, it belongs to everybody. So nobody can hold it close, even though that Israel declared the capital of Israel, because it's the kingdom of David. So on that matter, we're supposed to contact a guest now that will maybe let us into the insight of what the difference between beliefs and why people think that, you know, one is cannot let the other be. And I don't know if we have a minute to put the music on, and then we'll go to our guest, okay? Let's get some music on. that was a wonderful song from Sweetheart. It's about forgiveness. It's a classic in the Israeli music, and I'm so happy that today we had the opportunity as Sunday for some Israeli music and some traditional Jewish life. And we have with us Gerald O'Donnell, our guru, our friend, our best buddy, to come in the time of a challenge. Gerald, welcome to the show.
Yes, hello. It's good to be here.
Thank you. Thank you. And I was talking about, you know, the conflict that we have in Jerusalem today, because everybody wants a piece of it. And I say it's the ultimate test of God, that we all need to live and accept each other. But what's this deal? You know, like, you know, the Muslim wants to have Temple Mount and nobody else. Is that a part of their belief?
Of course, it's a part of the belief. It's an instinctive part of the belief. It's not a literal part of the belief, because if it would be a literal part of the belief, they would have conquered Jerusalem during the original Muslim conquest. So at least you would have had Muhammad going to Jerusalem, which he never did. Besides one allegory, when he says that he went to the furthest mosque and had an experience where he was taken to heavens, and the understanding is that the furthest mosque was the mosque in Jerusalem. So there is no physical contact between him. It was a spiritual journey, which is, by the way, correct.
Listen, but they built a mosque, so some other faithful believers.
It was done after. It was done after. So it was done after, because in the core of humanity, there is this understanding that there is a point where you can bypass all the intermediary levels of operations that we call heavens, and go straight to the source. To the Holy of Holy, to the Holy One, and that point is both within us, and we have, and it's both within the planetary body. It would be in Jerusalem. That's why it's called Yerushalem. Shalem means perfection. At that point, you can realign everything. So it has a very important reason to exist, but also a very dangerous reason to operate. Because it's also a point of contact between dissonance, you know, between the upper world and the lower world. That's why the valley in Jerusalem is called Gehinnom, which means the valley of hell. So those two operations have a point of contact, which is in Jerusalem. But through that point, you can access directly the total purity of the One. That's why the Ark was brought to Jerusalem, because it had to align to that level. And then you could build a temple.
Amazing. I think that I still need to understand the end game of every religion, because we, as a Jewish faith, we believe that you know, at the end of the day will be beautiful. You know, we had everybody will play along fine. There will be peace, and the Messiah will come, and everything will be good. Now,
yeah,
their end game is different. You know, our end game is positive, is good, and welcome for everybody. The rest, and I don't know if the Christianity is the same thing, being the Judeo-Christians, you know, they come from the Judea. Would they have a spin on it? Does it change for them? Because I know that there is a factor that we need to come to a common denomination where we all, as people, world, religion, need to go. It's not like the Muslims believe that they need to destroy all instruments,
yes,
of government.
Yes and no. Yes and no, I would say. And I would say yes and no about all religions. All religions are man-made, including ours. Okay, the core of the message is an inner message that at one point is pure. But like anything else, after a while, when people start doing interpretation of a message, an interpretation of the interpretation and their own interpretation. It is man's natural operations to think like a man, and we operate in space and time. So when we think we have to conquer the infidel or the darkness, we usually look on the outside of ourselves. It's not that we deny that we have to do it on the inside, but we usually start looking on the outside. And then you will find out that from the core of our credo, which is not a religion, but credo is our belief that there is one God, and therefore that one God is a father and mother of all beings, and that's the credo of Abraham. That's the realization that you should connect to that one God and destroy all the idols, or the not bow down to the intermediary steps, which in Hebrew are called Elilim. Elilim are not idols. These are energy. These are real forces, but these are intermediary forces, and many of those forces are corrupt. It's not Elohim. It's Elilim. There's twice the Lamed there. You see two Lameds. So these are lower, if you want. I don't like to call them gods or sub-gods, but these are lower forces that operate in creation or cannot potentially be in creation. You should never invoke them, because as you're invoking them, you're giving them more power. Through our concentration or through our life force, they get more power. So Avraham understood that he should connect to the unknown Holy One and bring that pure energy, the purest of all energies, into ourselves, and then that was the Brit, that was the alliance that was created between him and his descendants, which does, by the way, include his first son, which is Ishmael, who is the father of all the Arabs. That reconciliation is very important. That realization is important on both ends of the spectrum, because you have now madness engulfing in reality both ends of the spectrum. There is deep, deep resentment because of the religions that were created by far later, I mean thousands of years later, by both sides, especially the latest one, which is the so-called revelation of a man who created around which a religion was created, that's called the Islam. And then instead of integrating the former ones, the interpretation that was made later usually is that the former core understanding of who God is and what our role is in creation towards God and towards ourselves as a family, interpretation was meant by his disciples, by descendants, and by people who would have never even met him, and then understand that he never even wrote one word of the Quran. That was written by people around him, who claimed to be around him. And then you have this whole oral tradition. There is an oral tradition in the Jews called the Hadith. When they start, this is where when you start having oral tradition is when you start having religion. Because that's when people are starting to comment, and give their own interpretation. In the very core of the Islamic religion, there's an understanding that the holy war is a war that you have to fight within yourself, against the darkness in your own soul. And that is the correct one. The idea that you have to fight someone on the outside and even destroy it, or impose your will upon it, or God forbid, kill it violently. That is a total distortion of any monotheistic religion that descends from Abraham. That's like denying the message of Abraham totally, intrinsically. This is like. Being a servant of the dark side. This is the dark side of...
That's what we're saying. We're saying that most religion people understand that, and they're fighting for the goodness. And those
not necessarily, not even in our religion. You know, what? we just said in when we read the Torah last week, there is a very important message that comes out. In when God's asking in the part of the Torah that's called Kedoshim to you, how to be holy, is showing to his people, which is not only the Jews, it's the whole world in reality, is showing them how does a man become holy. And there's a very important passage where it says, he says that I will read it in Hebrew. V'chiyagur itcha ger b'artzachem lo tonu oto. If you have a ger, a ger is an interesting word in Hebrew. It means someone that lives, lagur, it's to live. Someone that lives with you, but that you have a connection to, first of all, and through that connection, you perceive that person as being different. That's a ger. You understand? It's not like Toshav or Ezrach. Toshav is someone that sits, that's sitting on the land. Ezrach means someone that has a legal citizenship. He says, when someone lives in you, and you perceive that person, even though you're in front of that person, it lives with you, you perceive that person as being a foreigner, not a foreigner, but a foreign to your perception of who you are, your group is, how he operates. It's a different way of operation. So you feel different. You feel at odd with its behaviors. Okay.
Right.
So he said, "Lo tonu oto, do not oppress him, ever." That's a very important part. And then God says, "Kezrach mikem yeah, he should be given the same rights as full right as a citizen. Ager bet itchem, the one that person who you perceive as being a stranger, because a stranger is someone that you feel is strange to you, okay? Ve'afta lo kamocha. This is, and he said, you should love him like yourself. Now, this is the second part, when the second time that God says that. He says that, but v'artale re'acha kamocha, you should love the one, we translate this, and it's not a correct translation, you should love the one across yourself, that your neighbor, like yourself. But understand that re'acha is also evil, ra is evil, is also the one. So basically, it's the same message again. If you have someone that's in front of you that doesn't behave in the way by which you think you should behave, or you are born in a certain culture, so you have a certain culture, but he lives amidst you, you should give him all the respect that you give yourself. You should love him as much as you love, this is very deep, as you love yourself, because in fact, he's part of the human family. He's yourself too. He's also a child of God. Right. The mother of Yishmael was Hagar, the foreign one. It's only Sarah who forces this whole cosmic play to be operating, with that we're suffering off until today. The degeneration on both sides have happened because humans have started doing their own interpretation as to what God really wants. Well, this is what God really wants in the Torah directly. He said you should love this person, and then he says you should kigerim eitem beret Mitzrayim, because when you were in Egypt, you were considered by them to be foreigners. You were living there, but they never saw you as being fully Egyptians. They never recognized that you were not only fully Egyptians, but you're fully human. And this, you suffered for that. So when you were going to create your future state and operate in the way by which I want you to be holy, this is what holiness is like. If this message could be transmitted throughout the world to us and through us, by example, we wouldn't have any wars anywhere. Because most of the wars right now is because countries are building fortresses against the ones they perceive as different. The ones that they perceive do not come from their culture. Europe is starting to build the same thing because of the influx of refugees. God right now is teaching everyone a lesson. Nothing is happening without God being involved right now. It's not a curse. It can be a blessing. But at the same time, if we don't understand it, and if we act by the way by which we think God wants us to act, and it is not at all the way by which God wants us to act, we will face high levels of destructions and violence. And Jerusalem will face that too, because Jerusalem is at the core of three major religions, which in reality are all based on one source, which is the belief in one God. Beyond that, how you worship that very same one unnamed God is almost irrelevant. What is important is to have the same belief, because at that point, the family falls back in love with each other. And there is no territorial fight about anything. Then the real temple can arise. Because Jerusalem does not belong in reality to humans. Humans are just going there to worship God. It's a symbol to God. How can you own God? It should be gifted back to God. It's God's land, God's territory, not only as a piece of real estate, because it's not a piece of real estate. It's a symbol and an energy anchor. It's where the real presence is there, and it has no name. It's present in the upper world, and it's present also in the underworld. And if you want to have peace between the upper world and the underworld, if you want to have balance between the positive and the negative, you have to have this alignment that we bring with our own hearts to that place. And then everyone can bow down the way they want to that place. It doesn't matter where they come from, if they come from China or they come from everywhere, because it's humanity's core and source, all of it. And then you will have what you call the era of the Messiah. Then you will have Chayshem.
Wow.
Then you will have Mashiach reverses Chayshem. Then you will have Shem is going to be alive in you and then manifested through you. That's the era of the Messiah. But if you say, as they do now, my Messiah is going to come and I'm waiting for it, or the Arabs are saying we're waiting for the Mahdi, whatever their interpretation of, which is different from the Shia, don't have the same interpretation as the Sunnis. And then if you the Christians say, my Messiah is Jesus who is going to come back, and it, believe me, all branches of Christianity have also a different interpretation of their Messiah, then not, none of this will, of course, ever happen. And we as humanity, we are going to choose to engulf ourselves in flames and destructions around Jerusalem, because this is the last fight. Is they even know this, the Muslims, that the last fight is around Jerusalem, because this is the only fight there is anyway. What's happening now is the periphery, because if we don't get what Jerusalem is really all about, if we don't understand the message of Abraham, if we don't understand the Torah in its core when it talks about how to be holy and how to behave towards someone that looks different from you, you don't impose your will, you don't impose your culture, you accept them as a brother because it's your brother.
Okay. Now
the problem.
I'm sorry if I may ask.
The problem. You know what the problem is right now. The real problem has nothing to do with the Torah. The problem has to do with the idea of democracy and electorate. This is a foreign Greek idea. This has nothing to do with our belief, our ancestry, and our core core growth. Yes.
Understanding. Now, Gerald, we need to wrap it up. I love you. I thank you for being here. I know your subject matter is important. We'll be talking about it more after this and the days to come. And we wish you a beautiful, beautiful Happy New Year and a Gmar Chatima Tova. And may God bring us a lot closer to humanity, you know, to get closer. And I need to wrap it up today because tomorrow we have another show at, it's 8 p.m. Jerusalem time, and it's 10 a.m. in the West Coast and 1 p.m. in the East Coast. So join us tomorrow for the Impossible Truth on BBS Radio. And Gerald O'Donnell, we'll talk to you soon. Thank you so much, everybody. Doug, bless your heart. And we'll be here tomorrow. All the best, guys. I love you all. Thank you so much for being here. Bye-bye.
מבעד חומה